July 15, 2020, it's a Watch for Pedro show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Watt from Pedro Show. Happy Wednesday. I'm going to be driving up to Hollywood after this in 24 years doing some of these songs with Pear and Pert, Peter, Porno Pyro guys.
Really? And,
wow, people, you can see that I'm not man alone. Brother Matt, you know, we're still in court and quarantino mode, so he's at the Love Grotto 3 miles south. But I am not man alone because of the wonders of the Skype software from them, those Estonian software geniuses. I got Jen Shellshag from Brooklyn.
Hey, hi, Mike. Wait, what? You're going up to Hollywood to play with Pornos with Perry Farrell?
Now you're all loud. You know, you were talking soft. It's that old sound check trick again.
Uh-oh. I'm talking soft. I didn't even know.
No, just talk the way you are and I'll adjust to it. Now, people, I don't know how many, three, four times I've got, four or five maybe, I've got to call up to your pad, which is bitching bad. Several people, John and Terry Show, Missing Man, El Sonio de Marinayo, an Oasis is the Shell Shag pad. And also as people, I got to share the stage with them last time I was in that zone. What was that, Mercury?
Yeah, Mercury Lounge.
Mercury Lounge, yeah, Manhattan. And actually, they had to connect with Pedro people here before me. So I got to thank Raul, right? He's the
yes. He's
the connect man. And because you were actually coming to town here to Pedro to play when I didn't know. Well, I was probably out touring like crazy. There was a period there. Yeah.
No, it's funny. Raul actually got me to... I was having problems with my elbow as a drummer. I used to play big fat 2B sticks. And Raul was like, nah, you want to move to, you know, 7A, 7B. And so Raul saved me. I've been able to drum longer because now I don't have that, like, tendonitis I used to have. So he's one of my favorite drummers ever.
George Hurley, 2B.
Oh, yeah, 2B.
In the old days, that's what I remember when we, because the big gig was, right, that's where you turn around is New York City. And it used to be 48th Street with Manny's and all that. That's all gone now. But I remember Georgie buying sticks and it was 2B. And he'd roll them too because some of them were like kind of lopsided and shit. So he'd roll them on the counter there. Okay, look, I want to go through both of you guys' journey through music, how you got to where you are now. So who wants to go first?
That was a long stretch for me to not speak, so I guess I'll go first. Everything
Shell.
Coming through all right?
Shell. What's your earliest... Shell.
Yes, sir.
What's your earliest musical recollection, please?
Going to see Kiss Alive 2 with my brother and my dad, because I threw a fit because he could go and I couldn't. I didn't even know who Kiss was, but... I felt a lot differently after the concert. Gene Simmons did the tongue and the blood, and Ace Frehley rose up from underneath the stage and then kept on going and flew and into Troy Rock City. And I was a young kid, so the makeup and all this was really fantastic, you know, for like a 9-year-old.
So you're saying this is the gig that they took songs from to make an album?
I don't think they used any recordings from the Houston show. I think they used recordings from different various shows throughout the thing, but it was that album release that I saw the tour for.
Yeah, but just to call a tour Kiss Alive 2 sounds crazy. it's probably the tour that came. Now, I got to tell you, my connect with Kiss, me and D. Boone, we saw them before they even had the first album out. They would open up for anybody here. We saw them with Wishbone Ash. You know, Savoy Brown.
Makeup, no makeup.
No, they. Well, the makeup was a little different. And the sign was small. It was light bulbs. I think when they didn't have makeup, they were called Wicked Lester or something. And I never saw that shit because that's, you know, Queens and New York City. And well, this is when they're touring. And they would open up for anybody. Remember, I'm here in Pedro. And so the gigs are across the harbor in Long Beach, most of them. And like I said, they... Camel, you know, the five-man version of the James Gang with Tommy Bolin. And when that fire thing, Gene Simmons' hair caught on fire, and a roadie had to come with a towel and knock it out. So we were on the side, we could see that kind of up close because of, you know, how fucked up those concerts were. You, not very good sound, not very good seats, but they were, yeah, they were, okay, I was at 9, but it was still exciting. I saw only one gig when they had the record. I remember when the record came out, it was so slow, but then there was a record, like it was on lunch pails and shit, right? Kiss Army. It was Destroyer.
Right.
That's the one, and I never saw him again after that.
Yeah, so, it was the first memory that popped in my head, I think, because of, I was so young. It wasn't so much a band as I was left. Ace Frehley for Halloween 3 years in a row, like the lunch boxes, all the extra stuff was a big part. My real musical beginning, my father's a square dance caller, and so he would be singing and working on covers in the living room since I can remember. So I was 3 or 4. And
Was there instruments in the house? Because he's using his voice,
right? My brother's room, there was a drum trap, but square dancing was done a lot. You went and had all the instrumental done. Because you want an instrumental track so other callers can call it live at a square dance. So my dad would be singing along to a pre-recorded 45.
A 45, not tapes.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, not tapes. So my dad actually won a lot of awards. He revolutionized that party. He'd go up to Nashville and have the really good
music. I know about calling and shit like that. If you ask me, it's got some roots in rap. Rap has roots in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you know, the idea of a lot of words.
A lot of words.
Maybe not so much melody, but a lot of fucking syncopation. It's really rhythmic, whether it's a square dance or it's rap. It's using words phonetically in rhythm. That's very interesting.
Yes, didn't your brother teach your dad something in
the car?
Actually,
no. When my brother was 16 and he was, his drumming was really good and chops, he got his scholarship to Berklee School of Music that he never took up. My dad had him come and do drums on a square dance for Hooked on Elvis, a bunch of medleys tied together, and he made it shine a little more than previous session drummers. He's an excellent drummer. My dad, had to take note.
Is he older brother?
Yeah, he's 3 years older. Okay. Sound Club. You guys have played together several times.
Did you jump on his drum set?
No, Mike, man, I'm so unambidextrous. I can play the drums only one way, all the feet and hands at the exact same time.
So you did jump on it.
Oh, yeah. I gave it some beating around. But I was like a jock, a quarterback of the football team. My brother was a drummer. My dad was the singer. I was kind of intimidated to do any music, although I daydreamed about it daily. And my brother eventually said to me from a weird little recording of a song called Carpet Technician that I wrote. He called it genius, and I was like, nah, and he's trying to let me know. Punk rock's made for people like you. It's not about perfection and talent. There's already an industry for that. It's about expression, and, you're playing three chords in key, and I said, those are awesome words. You should get involved. You should take part.
So you're saying at school you just did sports. You didn't do any music at school.
Until after high school, that's correct. Yeah, I didn't even learn how to play.
You weren't in the choir, you weren't in the marching band or shit like that?
Actually, I was in one play. I played the Scarecrow in our school's version of The Oz because I could moonwalk.
Were in theater?
Yeah.
That's a little different. Unless you're in the musical part of it, it's a little different.
Yeah,
but But it is getting in front of people and showing out.
That I always had. I danced a little bit when I was 8 or 9 in some productions my mom did for a clogging, which is kind of like square dancing. And that would be at the Square Dance National with a few thousand people. So I was always wanting to show off and not be shy.
What town, Shell, did you grow up in?
Houston, Texas.
Okay, Houston. Lightning Hopkins. Billy Gibbons.
My first band was really that breakdance group Jennifer mentioned, Soul Patrol. It was 12 people. There was a guy who kind of led us and guided us to doing a really good job, and we won a lot of contests and made a lot of money, even though I was dancing and performing. I was in love with that music at the time.
You know what I forgot to do? I forgot to tell people the first music. It was John Coltrane doing Blue Train.
The
first record he did on his own. And then you guys from your new album, something called Full Moon Young, and I want to play Jack Robinson.
Awesome.
Nice.
Once you're okay, on the Carol and Marie, you and me are gonna break not my friend, doesn't matter. Today, doesn't matter. At least they were not surprised.
Thank you. start to pick up the phone, I feel blank. I leave a message and I think you can't live without love. The world's dark,
for Pedro show. Yeah, Jack Robinson, Shell Shag. That's from a saying people would say to, like a placeholder, I'll be back before you can say Jack Robinson. I thought it was, you know, like Jack Johnson, right? Miles has got that thing. Was it the boxer?
Yeah.
Because there's a saxophone, I mean a trombone player. J.J. Johnson. My memory's terrible. The Goat Team's got something brand new. Cookie Scene. Petra Hayden after that, Bill Frisell doing Once Upon a Time in the West theme, little excerpt there. King Above. No, Tree Above with the tune King Above. Or is it King Above with the tune? Oh, I fucked that up. I got to check that out, people. But it's brand new, and I'm just too stupid to write it down wrong. Pat Smear after that, Pat from the Germs with his second solo album doing Innocent X. Dietrich and Barnes, that's John Dietrich from Deerhoof and Tim Barnes. Beautiful. I got to make a record with those two guys.
Excellent.
Called the Man to Hand Band. Yeah, it was a big debate. Is it going to be the Hand to Man Band or the Man to Hand Band? You know, life's full of crises like that. Deerhoof after that with Wadada Leo Smith. They did a live record just recently. Snoopy Waves, and that's got John Dietrich on guitar. Team Dresch has got a brand new album.
Really?
Donna Dresch I met. She was doing bass. I took the Screaming Trees on their first two tours, and she was the bass player for the second tour, I think in 1989. And it's called Story of the Earth. Amaya from Up in the City with the interlude Xylophonic Daydream. Magnet Hearts, that's Jonathan Hall. Backbiter, his solo record, You Can't Live Without Love. And finally, Pretty Ugly from Shell Shack. So, Jen, your turn. What's your earliest musical memory, please?
Well, I have to tell you, Team Dresch played at our house in San Francisco. We had a warehouse called Star Cleaners in the 90s. That's when I met a lot of the Recess records.
Yeah, but I'm talking about, is like, what's your earliest memory?
Earliest memory.
I've had people on the show tell me about, like, they were two or three. I can't remember shit.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I definitely remember because my uncle, who's only 2 years older than me.
Whoa.
I mean, my earliest musical memories are you put the lime in the coconut.
Harry Nilsson. You know that song is one part, one chord, right? It's all C7.
As little kids, we could do it. And then, you know, the Beach Boys and the Beatles, of course. But my favorite memory is Queen because he was in the Queen fan club, and so he was 9, and I was 7, and I wasn't allowed to go to the concert, and he was, and I waited all night for him to get home, because I lived with my grandma at the time, and him, and
so you're listening to his records, or is this off the radio?
We listened to the records.
Okay.
Because
so it's his records, okay.
Yeah, because my dad's family, there's 6 kids, so he's the youngest of 6. And so we had the older kids' records, and that's all we listened to.
Sure. And was there any instruments in the pad?
Yeah, guitar, keyboards.
Wow.
The first to have a 4-track. He recorded us. We would do skits on, remember those little tape decks with a handle that were so innovative where you could finally record yourself. It was like a handheld little mini.
About cassette players.
Yeah, those little white ones where like the handle would lift up
Where was this, Jen?
What?
Where was this?
It was in Clifton, New Jersey.
Okay, so not too far from where you are now.
Yeah, not too far.
Okay, so there's all these instruments in the house. So there's a lot of people that can play.
Jimmy was a musical genius, and I was his sidekick, so he would just instruct me, and I would do what I could to help, but I loved it, but I never imagined I'd still be drumming now. But the most interesting thing about the Queen concert was when he got home, I was like, what was it like? And he was like, it was the loudest sound I've ever heard. And I was like, what do you mean? And then he explained to me amplified music because we were only listening on records, right? So I never was in a room with an amp. We had acoustic guitars, but never amplified.
Actually, the way you heard that record was through an amplifier.
actually, you're
what,
right.
What about at school, Jen? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
No, actually, I was a jock like Shellhead, and I was like a stoner jock.
Look, I just asked those questions because I don't have the mind reading shit down yet. When I get that, when I get that done, I won't have to ask you stuff like that.
I believe you do.
I'm also curious about schools because some schools cut out their music programs.
Well, you know, it's funny. In my school, they had a drummer come to show us in the auditorium how athletic drumming was and how fun it was. And there was also a crossing guard that I really liked who had a drum pad. And he would hang out on the corner when I would go to school, and he'd let me play with his drum pad. So I love drums, and I begged my parents for drums. And they gave me a flute and a Jethro Tull album because we lived in an apartment. Drums were too loud and expensive. And I never bonded with the flute, although I did play flute in school.
Oh, and so you were in the band.
What was that?
You were in the band at school.
Yeah, I was in the band.
Yeah, but before you said you weren't.
Well, I feel like I wasn't because I never really, really play it much. I didn't feel good at it. I was insecure. And
sure.
I wanted to drum. And so eventually I started drumming with my jazz buddies in high school on the side. And they turned me on to like we would just, I would play at their house because they had drum sets and they would teach me like, you know, Blondie beats and, you know, just, we would just Led Zeppelin beats and I would just learn all these different beats that existed and,
you're using their drum set. When did you get your first drum set?
Oh, my first drum set. This is a great story. My friend Laura got one. You ever have a kid in school who gets what you want because they can? She got a drum kit because she knew I wanted one and she let me use it, but it wasn't mine. And then many years later, she came to my house and gave it to me because she said, you're the one who always wanted it.
Okay.
And I still have it, the blue Slinger.
Slingerland, wow.
Yeah, a blue Slingerland sparkle.
Those are, you know, they go way back. Georgie had a wooden snare from the 40s. That's what he played in Minutemen.
Oh, wow.
I wouldn't shit you.
Holy shit.
So, you know, both you guys, I didn't ask. What about after school with the basement band or the bedroom or the garage band? Did you guys do that?
I watched my brother do it with the Degenerates around 78, 79 in Houston, and I shared the garage and did my breakdance group. In the other time, we had to share the, you know, the teenager space out there in the garage.
Sure.
So I had a lot of, you know, exposure to it, but I still didn't know how to play the guitar. I didn't learn until college. Jen?
Go ahead, Mike. What?
Yeah, I'm asking you. Did you do the little, you know, like your first bands, right? But they're not really gig bands. They're just, you know, you just do it, right?
Yeah, I didn't have any bands until I got to college. I was in art school. And then I had a band, The Love and Mouthful, right? And it's 1990, I guess. So we're an all-girl band, and that's so weird. We were an actual band, and we would play at Euro shops and in Columbus, Ohio. Ohio State.
Yeah. High Street.
Yeah, High Street.
The big street. I know about that.
Yeah, so we would play. Oh God, what's the club where Tira did sound?
Stosh's Little Brothers.
Yeah, I saw Nirvana at Stosh's, like on the Bleach tour.
Well,
you know,
there was a few Stosh's, believe it or not.
Oh really?
Yeah.
That's funny. I didn't
John,
know that.
What was his name? Dan Dugan.
Yeah.
Dan Dugan. Absolutely.
He's out of the ring now. He don't do that anymore. But man, he's a great cat. They help the men and men out more than you can even imagine.
Wow.
Because we lost a gig, and they gave us a gig in a couple hours. Flyers on High Street, and, beautiful people. Why, this other motherfucker, they lied. They said there wasn't even a gig, that Chuck Dukowski book. Look, we're at the end of the first hour.
Okay.
July 15, 2020, this is your WAP Pedro Show special guest, Shell Shag. Hold tight for hour two. July 15, 2020, it's the second hour of the Live for Pedro show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Pedro Show. We start off the second hour with Shell Shag and their new album. What's the new album called?
It's called FUTQ, Follow Up the Quest.
That's what I thought it was an acronym.
Yes.
Because I didn't know how to pronounce fuck.
Yeah, I'm so glad you got it.
Okay, Kingdoms Crash. Then David Gerard, he's got a brand new album. Sun is Shining is the track. Few from Japan with Not Going Anywhere. Chris Burns out of Canada with I'll Call Your Name. And then No Perfect. Shell Shag. Like you were talking about, Shell, your brother saying No Perfect, right? Just do it. Express yourself.
Yeah.
Right. Now, I know everybody's been waiting to hear you guys answer this one. How'd you meet?
I'll take that. And then, Jen, you have to come on with the second half. But I moved to San Francisco because my brother was out there. He had that recently encouraged me to play music. He's going to do a band with me called 50 Million. So I moved out there. We started this band, and Jennifer is one of the first people he introduced me to. She had a warehouse called Star Cleaners, and she couldn't get us on the show, but she let us play outside on the sidewalk. Show sold out. We ended up playing to more people outside on the sidewalk and inside. And Jennifer had a love at first sight moment that night while she was working the door, and I showed up, and we locked eyes. Jennifer, your version?
Yeah, and it kind of scared the hell out of us because we were in our, I guess I was, at that time, 25, and I really was into being single, and I found myself creatively and was running a warehouse with my friends, and it was all ages, and we didn't serve alcohol or anything like that. We served tea, and it was donation, and it was a beautiful time, and Shell and I kind of fell in love, but then also avoided each other in that way for about 3 years till we finally, it was pretty cute, because Shell came back and was like, you know what, I just like being with you, and I'm happiest with you, and I said, I agree. And so from the time I was 28 until now, we've just been together. We get things done together, Shell and I. We're a good team.
Now, it's very interesting, this romantic part, but I was kind of talking about the band. Or are they both part of the same thing?
They are, actually, because we were both in bands. I had 50 Million. Jennifer had Static Faction. Both were doing really well and sounding really great about the time we were really bonding, second album times. And Jen and I are spending all the time that we're not with the band, her and I, and we're in that young time period where songs just pouring out and you're holding the guitar. If you're not asleep, you're writing or playing something. So we're writing songs in the bedroom and putting them on tape, and we just think they're just way too cute and just horrible, and we're hiding them from everyone. We made like 4 or 5 cassettes, and we just wrote Shell Shag on the sticker, my half of my nickname and half of her last name. No plan to do anything else. A few years later, when those two bands broke up and we started playing together, we spent a year trying to have a different band name until friends just were like, you know, we all call you guys Shell Shag because of those cassettes you passed around.
That's who you are. Just
like a half dozen cassettes.
Yeah, Shell was in a band, 50 Million. I was in a band called Static Faction. We were really psychedelic. I love that band. It was a great band. And then I was in a band called Noise Star and the Niddles, and I did percussion for a lot of people. Like, I did percussion for the Brian Jonestown Massacre. And
over this 4-year period, we went from having just met to having lost the bands we were in, and all we had was those songs we were writing and each other. So we rebooted our band of brothers and sisters with the natural band that was hanging around, which at this point was down to just me and Jennifer. We started our duo, but Jen was genius and said we should face each other, which brought her out from behind the drums and put her up front. You, nobody puts baby in the corner.
Well, don't forget, we also did Kung Fu USA. We had a bass player, and that's where we crossed paths.
There was a three-person version of Shell Shag.
Yeah.
Yeah, we crossed paths with you then.
We crossed paths with you then when Jay Masakis and the Fog was happening. And when you were getting with the Stooges.
It was the night before we opened for Iggy Pop, and you guys all came over to the show. And
a Great American Music Hall.
At the Fillmore.
At the Fillmore, I think.
Is it Fillmore? I think, but I think, because I remember going with Jay and the drummer man, George Burrs. This was Jay Mascus of the Fog.
Yeah.
And he came over with Brother Steve because he lived in the city then, the sax man. And Ron, and actually Ron Ashton.
Yes.
And we saw him play
with his solo band. It was the Great American, I think it's Great American Musical. But I could be wrong. Look, I want to play Open Season.
Okay.
Thank all of you who stayed through the threatening flood to catch our last night. Now, especially our roadies and friends, Pat and T over there. This is a sad moment, friend.
Yeah,
I'm out of my way. Next song is kind of our, what used to be our anthem. It's called Rock and Roll. It's about the music that saved my life. I don't know about yours. I hope so. I hope it saved your life too. We have something in common then. Story about a little girl named Jenny in the early 50s. That's before they had Watergate and marijuana and soapers and everything else. There was nothing to do except listen to music, dance. Didn't have to worry about peace demonstrations or anything. Yeah, I just had to worry about getting pregnant. Jenny didn't have to worry, she was only 5 years old.
Yeah, her life was saved by rock and roll. rock and roll and it's fine. All the amputation, baby, you can skip a dance to the rock and roll station, baby, it was all right, it was all right, come on, baby, it was all right. Oh,
I just can't Locked believe.
Watch the Pedro show. Yeah. You heard Shell Shag do an open season. Then Peter Lochner after that from the old Cleveland scene with Rock and Roll. Foxen from Dan Klukas, Jeb Bishop, Damon Smith, Matt Crane. Barcelona, Chico Raros, Wild Boys, Tormenta. Round Dyke from Shanghai. They're all Laowai guys, though. But they love living there. Well, some parts. Red Crimes. And after that, Shell Shag with Fallen. And where did you record this? There at the pad?
Yep, right here at the studio, yeah, where we all hang out when you come.
Love that pad. And, you know, they've got it fixed up, people, for, like, kind of filming stuff, like the soundstage. But it probably has got great acoustics for a recording.
Really does.
Hey, you know what I forgot to ask? What was the first Shell Shag gig like?
Well, we were called Revenge.
And really? Why?
We were trying to avoid the Shell Shag.
Oh, the name on the cassette.
Yeah, and we searched up and down for a band name, and we liked the sound of Revenge. We felt like on our own against the world because Jen had gone through a squatting thing with the warehouse that she ran. And we just felt kind of outcasted, and we happened to, like, fight our way through everything. So Revenge sounded good. We didn't know there was a Revenge between Warsaw and Joy Division.
It's the bass man from Joy Division, right?
Yep.
Right, and probably about 300 other Revenges, including one in town that was also called Revenge. And but I wore a suit and tie, and Jen wore a gown, and we did what we do now, but without the pyramid thing.
Uh-huh.
Didn't really appreciate it the way we did, sweating up a suit, you know, going from crisp and almost mother and dad looking to just a part at the end.
Yeah.
It helped Jen get a fresh start on playing music.
So what was this Revenge gig like?
Same five songs, which we continued to do for about 2 years straight.
Yeah.
And couldn't be any songs we had already written or sound like our other bands, so they weren't the best of songs, but we learned how to have a lot of energy and perform on stage instead of just survive the set without messing up the songs. So it was an important time period for me and Jen as artists.
Yeah,
we both played with really talented musicians in the other band and felt they carried us, and now it's just me and her, so we had to put some kind of magic together that didn't require someone to come save the day.
Well, when did the bass player come in and get scissored?
Prior to the Shell Shag thing, Dan was playing bass with us with Kung Fu, and we started that because I wrote some extra songs, 50 Million, and wanted to be in a band.
Kung Fu's another name?
Yeah, it was called Kung Fu USA. That's the band that opened up for Iggy Pop.
And the
so
band.
That's before you're called Revenge.
Yeah.
But still, the real core is Shell Shag.
Right.
All the way through, I think, really. You know, me and Jennifer played with people when they were around, but as we got older and the stronger of a couple, we
came. No, not older. Less younger.
Yeah, less younger. People, you know, fell in love with other people, and they couldn't hang around all the time, but me and Jennifer are still hanging around, so the band just naturally trimmed down to the two of us.
Oh, and that's how you lost the bass.
Yeah, we wanted to tour all the time, too, and it was no one else did, and so we said, all right.
Honestly, losing the bass without the bass drum wasn't that big of a deal. So the stand-up drums and not the bass not being there were kind of a duel happening. They, you know, it worked a little better to have no bass.
Well, you know about this thing about the bass drum, kick drum holding the beat like that. It wasn't really like that in the old days. In the jazz stuff, they used it for bombs and shit. It was Earl Palmer. Little Richard's drummer, because they couldn't carry a bass player, and he would kind of hold down the bottom with a steady, that rock and roll kick drum beat did not exist before the 50s.
Wow, that's so interesting to hear. We didn't know that.
Listen to Elvin Jones, or, you know, anybody, you know, Philly Joe Jones, even, well, don't listen to Buddy Rich cuss, you know, but they're not holding the beat. Where they hold the beat is with the cymbals, either the hi-hat or the ride.
Yeah.
It was just a whole different mindset, you know. Even the basses, they were giant violins, right?
Yeah, I had that Buddy Rich.
Things change. The only thing that stays the same is things change.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's funny, when Shell and I did really start with facing each other, we had my friend had gone to Rwanda and brought me these bells, and Shell was like, what do you want to do today? Like, that's different. Like, just not being a traditional sort of rock band. So I'm like, I want to face you and stand up and jump around. And that's when we really formed Shell Shag the way you've seen us, where we...
Okay. We're at the end of the second hour, July 15, 2020. Special guest, Shell Shag. Hold tight for hour three. July 15, 2020. It's the third hour of the Walter Pedro Show.
Come better. on the keys. First day we met, had no idea what they even looked like yet. And I still don't know, 'cause all day long we sit there staring ahead out the road in the hot sun in the 91, making movies, blaring music. And then one day they talked. They talked. And then when we talked again, we became friends. One that I really miss. One I'm so glad I met. One who knows which way to go.
Of the Minutemen, because we covered
Underground Railroad, Todd's band, Aristide's
Todd.
Band.
Underground Railroad to Candyland.
Right.
But you know what? With Todd, it don't matter what the name of the band is. It's going to sound like Todd.
It's fucking Todd C. The Todd C. Cool.
Yeah, let's tell the people what we just heard. We started the third hour off Torch from Shell Shag. They Crave of Forever, Dream Phases, Promises, Promise of Promise. And Shell Shag, finally, Keep Your Eyes on the Road. That's a tour tune.
Oh, yeah.
Now, okay, so you recorded this new album at the pad. So you had the luxury of taking your time. So I'm wondering how long?
About 2.5 years. We really couldn't find a place for it when we were touring and really having some opportunity to play the songs that we had been doing a while and played stronger. Yeah. So we weren't playing them live very much and felt like we had plenty of time to, like, keep tweaking them. Then we just didn't do anything because we weren't doing anything. Like, we were as confused as anyone. It's like, hey, everyone, take a break. So we did. But we were getting antsy. So when you emailed me, I was honest. Hey, you got any music? It's like, I got like an album and a half. I'd love to do something. This was the first thing we were inspired to jump on at a time when we were not sure how we're going to tour it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, get news of it around even really. Jen and I are kind of old school. We don't really work our internet well. So, but getting to debut it on the Watt from Pedro show, boom, let's master it up. So it's been ready for some time. We just, well.
And however the sitch is, it's kind of a document of that time, right?
It really is. And it wasn't complete. The time wasn't complete. So it makes a lot of sense to put it out now. Because this last little thing that happens really tied to a lot of stuff we did prior. Like all the way back last October, we pulled all of our music off the streaming networks and went just with our own Bandcamp. I never realized what I had done there. I didn't do it intentionally. It happened while everything changed. I wasn't comfortable with that, so I undid it. And now I'm taking a look at what we're looking at now. But since I started that, everything's changed, so everyone's probably looking at it now. So we feel like we got a head start and it all makes sense.
Well, I think the band camp people are pretty kind to the bands compared to the other fucking bullshit, right?
I can tell you without assumption from having pulled off and have statistics that 10 times more listens on Bandcamp and 10 times more intimacy and fun, and I like that.
Yeah.
I'm almost uncomfortable with someone I don't know here in my band. I'd really rather meet them first.
I know, but the situation, right?
Yeah.
Right. When it rains lemons, right, make lemonade. I read somewhere that whoever wrote those Shakespeare plays, King Lear was written during a lockdown.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, look, I want to hear Follow Up the Quest.
All right.
I can't get along. Thank you. We are the Lexacy. Welcome to the future. Signing off. Peace, love, and conquering your fear of death. Good luck.
This is San Pedro to me.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
From History of the World Part 2 or?
Yeah, but when you say corn dog.
Or I wait. Say this is Bob Dylan to me. It's called History Lesson Part 2. Because
Bob Dylan.
I had a song called History Lesson on Punchline. Right. So I came back on Double Nickels on the Diamond.
History Lesson Part 2. We almost called a record.
When I mentioned Pedro, I said we drove up from Pedro.
Yes. And so we say...
We altered the lyric and said this is...
I also have some fun with some ambiguity, because I said we are fucking corn dogs.
Yeah, yes. What do you mean there? Like, you're goofy people, right?
It means, well, it, fucking could be either an adjective or a verb.
Right.
Well, I'm just going to leave it at that.
I know when I was really young, I kept thinking there was, like, something about the corn dogs and Pedro, because I never really thought the line.
A corn dog... Yeah, we didn't like eating those. A corn dog is somebody who's kind of corny, right? He's kind of he's embarrassed. He's embarrassing, but in a way, he ain't embarrassed because he's not, you know what I mean? He doesn't realize he's a corn dog.
Right.
So it had nothing to do with food, but it did have to do with the ambiguity between the adjective and the verb for fucking. Yeah. I was just trying to say there was a big beef going on in the letter section of Flipside between, you know, a friend of mine, a singer of TSOL, right, Jack, and somehow who's the more whatever. And I wrote that song, look, at the end of the day, we're all just people and trying to express ourselves, and you get into these weird kind of things to get a beef over, criminy. So that's what I was trying to do. And the bass line was too hard, so I asked D. Boone to do the vocals. So he had to change the line, me and Mike White, because he couldn't say me and D. Boone.
Right. Mike actually wrote a lot of the stuff that he's
I didn't realize that. Lyrics,
yeah.
So what you're trying to do is get a little setup going so you can play outside.
Yeah, yeah. For the tour, for this record, we're going to do, even if it's just 6 people in a backyard or a campsite and 20 people, but we want to make sure it's masked, gloved, and sets a positive example. Doesn't, cause it to be more problems with people doing some outdoor
stuff. Shell, where can people find you on the internet? I forgot to ask.
Shellshag.com, and it links to all of our other stuff, and it's the easiest to remember.
Yeah, no, of course. But spell that for the people.
SHELLSHAG.com.
Yeah. And from there, there's all the other flyers on the telephone poles.
Exactly. Yeah. Everything we have is.
I've been to the site. I love it. You got a good site. And it's your fanzine, right? There's no middle man, no filter.
Oh, yeah, no, not at all.
We're
direct,
pretty adamant about
band.
Not having middle.
Can I ask you about the process? Do you guys make demos?
We do in a weird way. If Jen writes a song, she does it on an acoustic and usually with one finger, or an electric and one finger, and she does a lot of stuff in E with this under drone note. I can play a little better, so I can play with it a little as long as Jen still likes it. And I usually bring mine, like a Peter Stubbs or, a quick punk, a guy doing a solo version of a no effect song or something, just, power chord and I jam it out. Everything else we build up in the studio.
What I'm wondering about is, do you make a little cassette of it or a little recording on a pewter or something?
No, we practice live.
I'm talking more about the composition stage.
The composition for me, I usually just voice memo these days, like if I have an idea.
So you sing in your leash or something?
Yeah, into my phone.
Yeah.
And then it's like the track, Keep Your Eyes on the Road, that you'll hear. That was actually recorded in New Jersey with Marissa Paternoster from the Screaming Females, and I just do voice memos, and then I share them with Shell, and then he makes it much more magical, because
a lot of that. I got a little Sony recorder, a little Econo thing, and I just, while I'm doing my hobbling at crack of dawn, I just will hum little, melody lines. Do you ever write songs on drums?
You know what, Mike? No, and I've tried. It's really strange, because I can't seem, it's like really weird, I can't seem to write a song from drums. In fact, when I write a song and then I get to the drums, I almost don't even know what the beat is because I'm such a droner on guitar,
So you do a little guitar. Shell, do you?
Yeah.
I know you're less younger now than when you were the little brother, but do you ever jump on her drums?
I did on a couple of shows that are infamous because I really horrible at it. I keep perfectly good time. I just don't know how. And at any time I've tried to even get a serious beat going, my feet, my hands won't work separately at all.
Okay.
So the 2 times I drummed live, I did both feet, both hands going,
you're a braver man than I am, Shell. Look, both you guys. What would you give advice to younger people getting into this racket?
Oh, wow. Just do it. Don't even think.
Okay. That's
great. Right?
It's great advice.
Don't let anything stop you from getting started and be yourself.
Be yourself. Don't listen to,
that's good stuff. That's good.
Yeah,
stuff.
Just go with the flow and pick it up.
And how much experience? I mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, I never wrote a song. Shell inspired me because I would write them. I never even viewed them as songs. I didn't. No one said you're a songwriter or all that.
No, as a team.
Yeah, and then I was like, hell yeah, I can write songs. And
that's right. Look, big honor for me. And please let me be the person to debut the next Shell Shag album.
Oh, it'd be our pleasure and honor.
People, it's been the July 15, 2020 edition of Peter, so keep your powder dry.